Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on The War Between the Land and the Sea. It was a one-season show, or at least this is the first season. I expect it to be just the one season.
I think of it as an event series.
Yeah, with BBC-type stuff, it's less season than series. While they could possibly do something later with it, I kind of doubt they will. They may do another unit thing. This is part of the Doctor Who universe. It doesn't involve the Doctor. It does involve Unit and a couple of characters that we have seen before. But really, once we get past the head of Unit, Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, really, like, only two or three of the other people in Unit were familiar to me.
Yeah, Bingham.
There was the one in the wheelchair.
Yep.
There was the soldier guy.
Christopher.
And
there was a second one in a wheelchair that I feel we may have met fairly recently in something that had a lot of Unit.
Okay. But only a couple of familiar faces from the more recent Doctor Who. Well, Kate Lethbridge-Stewart goes back a ways. But this was basically fleshing out stuff happens on Earth even when the Doctor's not there to personally get involved.
Mm-hmm. And we have to handle it ourselves.
Yes. And this really goes towards a lot of what we've been alluded to in the past of Unit's fairly busy all the time.
Yeah.
And we're finally seeing what they're doing when the Doctor doesn't have to get involved. It would have been nice to have at least gotten a mention of Torchwood.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic crux here is obviously the war between the land and the sea. The land represented by humans, and the sea represented by Aquakind, which we had seen before going back, I want to say, at least to the Matt Smith era, if not earlier. We had seen when they had woken up or were starting to and things of that sort. So this is something that had been kind of brewing in the background of Doctor Who for at least a decade or so. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated all of that. And Russell T. Davies is just a crazy talented writer, showrunner, etc. And there were a lot of things here that weren't predictable, but when they happened, it's like, yeah, that's classic Russell T. Davies type stuff.
There were things that were nicely foreshadowed and or set up without being blatantly telegraphed. What comes to mind immediately for me is when Salt is first experiencing life on land, and she's simply having fun running around, playing with the echoes and the acoustics in the warehouse, and how deliciously breakable and loud glass is.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a kid in a candy store.
I'll be honest, I was wondering if it was a matter of she was getting too much oxygen because she was out of the water for too long and she's not used to breathing it versus going through the gills or something. It felt a little out of character.
It felt out of character, but it was also my old life is closed off to me now. I'm effectively banished from my people.
Yeah, she was definitely seeing the silver lining and mm-hmm. taking what enjoyment she could out of the moment. Even if it was not a great moment.
Yeah.
She was a well-set-up character, well-defined, and really her role in the story was the representation of Aquakind.
And she did it beautifully. I mean, I have other issues with Aquakind, but I loved her portrayal and representation.
Yes, yeah, she did a terrific job there. This story would not have worked with a lesser person in that role.
I wholeheartedly agree.
I thought Tide, which is really about the only other of Aquakind we really get to know, was good, was interesting, but he was needed as, I don't say the bad cop,
mm-hmm.
but kind of the second, I don't say second string ambassador, but the one to fill in when she was gone.
Well, you could have had this ambassador all along. You got lucky that yes. Salt was the chosen delegate.
Yes. Things could have gone a lot worse if it started with Tide and she had to come in and pick up the pieces.
Part of what frustrated me with Aquakind was they seemed to have, I don't know if we were supposed to be seeing races among their people or what.
Well, there were definitely different types. Tide and Salt were the most humanoid of them. Mm-hmm. And the next tier seemed to have more fish or almost beak-like mouths and were a little more aquatic. And there were some that were almost, it felt like seals or something.
Yes. Type. Yes.
So there were definitely different layers or different branches of aquakind. They were listed off at one point.
Well, and I got the feeling that we were supposed to be getting kind of what would be a Neanderthal.
Yes, it's different stages of evolution.
Yeah.
That weren't killed off by the later ones.
Yeah.
I did think Russell T. Davies and the writing crew did a good job of walking the line of aquakinds at least willing to negotiate with humans. But if they've studied us for any length of time, they've got to realize how unlikely it is we're not going to wind up at war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the totality of human history, peace is not our thing.
And how many of our wars have either taken place on the water or had a water element? Imagine viewing human history in terms of life on land through the eyes of the water, because you're seeing the privateers and the pirates, the blockades, submarines. You're seeing World War II. Where subs were taking down civilian ships, sometimes on accident, sometimes on purpose, because civilian ships were being repurposed as military transports and supply ships.
Well, and all that World War II in the Pacific aspect was literally planes were just dropping out of the sky into their realm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not even touching on the whole pollution aspect, which was touched on quite a bit in the show.
I gotta give 2 points to whoever came up with the Titanic bit. I enjoyed that.
I did think that was kind of funny. And I had noticed the plastic bag floating at the beginning, and then for it to kind of come full circle and stuff was kind of interesting. And there's an aspect of, it feels like classic Russell T. Davies, of what we're doing to the climate is a really bad thing and we should stop it. And he's just personifying that into a literal war.
Yes. Yes. You know,
climate war kind of a thing without the name of it. And he does a good job of doing the morality play without smacking us on the side of the head with a 2x4.
But also bringing in a way that isn't comic relief, but almost feels like it is, of the, but big business is going to say it costs too much money.
Mm-hmm.
And the politicians are going to say, but we need decades to do what someone who is simply a goal-minded person might say I could do in 5 years.
That's what I really liked about some of those negotiations, is if there were something like aquakind, and it were to come to the surface and say, you're poisoning the waters, our governments would say, oh, well, we're working on it, we're doing this, it'll take this long, here's what we'll pledge to, and stuff like that. And the reasonable response, or expected response on the other side, is, you've got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that whole thing played out in a fairly, unfortunately, realistic manner.
The only thing that surprised me in all of that was the use of 2065 for the when they thought they could do 50% buy.
That did seem kind of far out.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like usually when governments set deadlines, it's more like 10, 15, or 20 years. And then when the deadline approaches, it's, oops, we were overly ambitious.
I've got to imagine, though, that they did a little research to find out, you know, because it's one thing if a country says we'll do this by this point. Because, of course, they'll say they'll cut emissions by this. They'll do this with pollution. They never do, and they pull back. Some countries more so than others at certain times. But when you do it at a global level, and you've had to get all the countries to come to the table and such.
They were talking about all the waterways.
Yes, rivers, lakes, oceans, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole bit of, yeah, you can't even travel on it. Where I thought the aquakind got overreached a little was, we want the skies, too.
That was priceless. Because at first I'm like, they want the sky. Oh, they're talking the clouds and the rain. So they're seeing moisture there.
I think they should have been clear on that. You can have the air.
Yeah.
We'll take the clouds and the rest.
Yeah.
And if people had realized, wait, you mean it's not going to be able to rain on us? Oh, that's wait, we need the water, don't we?
And their point of, you can fly over your land, but not over our water. I mean, one of the things that I think the average person is unaware of is if you're on an airplane and you convince the flight crew you have an emergency, and they have to dump however much fuel over the oceans to make an emergency landing. If the airline can prove you were wrong, whether you were pranking them or you were making a big deal out of nothing, whatever, if they can prove you were wrong and you knew you were wrong, you were just trying to whatever.
If you were doing it maliciously and knowingly.
Or to get attention or for whatever, yes. Yeah. You have to pay for all that fuel that they dumped.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one case where the airline went after somebody of, you claimed an emergency and you knew it wasn't one.
Yeah.
And that's when they found out just how many gallons of fuel are on an aircraft.
And it ain't cheap, I've got to imagine.
Well, but then I started seeing the articles about the oil and the things that drip from aircrafts just in the course of flight. And like, there are buildings near an airport that we used to fly in and out of on a regular basis that they had signs for their employees of, yeah, you know that balcony that says it's a nice break room to go sit outside and eat? Don't do that.
Yeah.
Because they had realized what all had dripped down from being under the flight path.
The other thing they really dealt with here was not just that we've polluted the waters and all that, but this isn't a new thing.
Yeah.
It's been going on for decades, in some cases, centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's beyond our scope of cleaning it up, if you've got an underwater society that's been there for millennia and is just waking back up, they still got all their old tech.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was essentially, what if Atlantis woke up and said, oh, but we'll take care of this for you. We'll return all of your pollution and stuff.
That was priceless to me. It was a broad definition of pollution to me.
Yes.
I'm not going to say I disagree with vast portions of it, but there was a few, like sewage. I've never seen that classified as pollution before. I get where
malicious
they're coming from.
Dumping and stuff like that. The part I never understood, I mean, it was literally raining down from the skies at some point.
Mm-hmm.
How did they get it up there?
I'm assuming the water carried it up to the clouds.
Yeah. It didn't matter for the story, and it made for a very dramatic...
No, but if we had
comeuppance.
If we had seen the water carrying it up out of the oceans into the clouds to disperse,
yeah,
what an effect that could have been. And one of the reasons why I finally asked you 3 or 4 episodes in, wait, we're not seeing where I'm used to seeing the unit.
No. Unit was not in their normal base at the top of the tower, because they had a base that was essentially the London equivalent of Avengers Tower.
Yeah.
We never saw that. They were in a different base. I had assumed at one point, because by the time UNIT comes into the story, we followed another group from UNIT with the instigating incident.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, it's happening all over the world. Now let's go cut to London. I had figured at that point they had moved down to temporary digs near where they were setting up this ambassadorial room.
Yeah, they seemed to be in some kind of situation room that was within the same building.
Yeah, but it was a little weird because it seemed to now be their mainstays, and we never once cut back to the old digs.
See, I would have liked to see the tower at least once, and what I would have been blown away by is if at some point Salt, the Aquakind ambassador who's been very graciously coming through this strange tunnel that we have made for her to swim in through, if at some point she wants to talk to UNIT and basically skip the protocol on the front door and just have a spout of water deliver her onto that helipad balcony thing on the tower.
I would have done that, and I would have had her chased off of it, and we realize it may be a little ways from the Thames, but not so far that she can't jump and make it.
Mm-hmm. That would have been one heck of a high dive.
It would have. But for me, that just reeks of Namor in the Marvel Universe. He's the Aquakind of their type.
Okay.
So I think it was a little weird not to see some of the unit headquarters and stuff that we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
We saw enough familiar faces that made sense that it's definitely unit. Again, probably the best use of Kate Lethbridge-Stewart that we've seen.
Yeah.
And she's been well used historically.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think they just finally gave her the limelight she's been deserving for quite some time. So I thought the writing was top-notch.
I thought the human that ended up being the human ambassador was really well written.
Well written and well acted, because that's somebody who's got to play the so far out of his depth to not even be funny.
Yeah.
And just terrified of, I should not be here, I should not be here. And at one point there was a, you know, I'm not even supposed to be in this room because of you kind of a deal of, well, yeah, that's the guy he was accidentally subbing for.
Yeah.
And he's whisked out of the story. Because the only reason that character had to exist was to explain how this guy, who had no business being where he's at, got where he's at. He's the head of the motor pool for UNIT.
Yep, he agreed to take somebody else's phone calls.
Yeah, and now he's forever their sub. So he's got to play the in over their head, but he's also got to be able to be empathetic with the aqua kind. He's also got to be able to kind of hold his own in some of the other situations with some other people.
Giving him a teenage child really helped bolster the empathetic and compassionate side of him. Giving him a very amicable divorce also boosted basically the diplomatic side of him.
Yeah, there were signs that he could handle it, but there was also signs it was definitely a challenge.
Exactly. Well, but there were signs he had the capabilities, even if not on the world stage level. He could be diplomatic when he needed to. He could be caring and compassionate.
Yeah.
He had the natural qualities.
What I liked was when Kate mentioned that she'd seen regular people do extraordinary things. Followed up with, but usually they're with the doctor when that happens. And then when he's going off book, because he's got these teleprompters telling him what to say, and we keep cutting back to Kate, paragraph 24A at this point. Because they've prepped for everything, so it's just put up the right part of the script. And it's like, we don't have a script for that, or he gets it, but it's like, that's not what needs to be said right now.
Yeah, he realizes that there are times when the script and the diplomatic speak is what needs to be said, and there are times when you actually need to be honest and connect with the person.
And compassionate.
Yeah.
What I loved about all that was when he gets to the point where he takes the earpiece out and it just says what he's got to say. And does well with that. We then have a later scene where Kate is in that position, getting fed the stuff. They don't have a script for it. And she finally takes the thing out and answers Tide's question.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for a moment there at the end where those two would talk and kind of, hey, I saw what you did, Kate. Yeah, sorry I gave you a hard time about it, but I'm in charge of UNIT. You're in charge of the motor pool or something.
Yeah. I had also hoped that that general we started out with would have a moment with Barclay after the diving bell.
Yeah, because I think he was definitely seeing Barclay in a much better light at that point. And I liked the general. I was sorry that he got written out of the story.
Yeah, so was I.
Because his comments to Barclay, Barclay's like, I'm here by accident. He's like, well, we got to have a civilian. You're the civilian. You're stuck here now, buddy. So... But in a good way, kind of a rise to the occasion, kid.
There was also something along the lines of how much of history has been made.
Yes.
By people who were there by mistake and by accident.
Yep, yep. Fate chose you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that the story never laid out, well, there were a few things they never laid out for me that I wish they had. And one of them was the pearl, which seemed to kind of maybe be... a communication device?
It was kind of a communication device, kind of a tech thing, because Salt would touch it, and that's when it would show the things. And they were trying to figure it out at UNIT, but they also made the comment of, this civilization is so far beyond us.
Yeah.
That we're like kids just poking in the dark at it. And that's where I think they just kind of left it of, yep, it can do stuff, we're trying to figure it out, but we can't.
I wish there had been a comment along the lines after Salt showed the footage of Barclay that was kind of a, this is why I'm choosing you. You showed respect to our species when you thought no one could see it. I wish that when they had cut to UNIT, it would have been, wait, that looks like it has to have been filmed or recorded at the angle the pearl would have been at. Does that mean she is recording everything she... quote, sees, and all of her people are seeing it.
I would have liked to have seen the guy at UNIT, the tech guy with the smart glasses, basically spout off at some point, well, clearly it's this, that, and the other. Just do kind of the doctorish technobabble and people kind of look at him. It's cool. That's what the doctor would say.
Yes.
And that's about all he's got.
Yeah.
And I did like when Kate likened Barkley to the doctor of, it's like some people you just can't control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was a fun story. It's in 5 episodes, total runtime, maybe 4 hours-ish.
It took a little while to get rolling. And part of that was quite a bit of, it's not fair to say establishing the world.
We had to see the instigating incident and how both sides had done wrong to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Some of what the Aquakind was capable of, and to set up to the, we need to sit down and talk about this. All of that was the first episode, and it takes a ways into it to really even get the unit we're used to, or the people we're familiar with in there.
Yeah.
That was 2/3 of the way into the first episode or something.
Yeah.
And it felt like most of the second was almost, I don't say a courtroom drama, but they're in this area where they've set up this huge waterway, airlock, and UN-ish sort of room to have the human ambassador talk to the Waterkind ambassador and all of that. And most of the action takes place there.
Yeah.
But once we start getting to that third and fourth and fifth episode, we're starting to, I mean, we spent quite a bit of the first episode off in this one island place where the fishermen accidentally discovered the Aquakind, etc. But we see the diving bell, we see underwater stuff of the Aquakind's place, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
We really see a lot more of the world in the later episodes, and it never felt, even in that second one, like we were trapped in a room.
Mm.
But I can definitely see where there was a matter of, we need a couple of key set pieces.
Yes.
Where the talks take place, the unit situation room, that was a surprising amount. I mean, not all of it, but a surprising amount of the series. The key events were there, of course.
And then we moved Barkley and his family to the hotel rooms.
Yeah.
I assume there were two separate rooms that were basically identical because they were hotel rooms. But it got to the point where it was kind of a, we have a hotel room that we can just kind of cycle residents through.
He was in it at first. I thought he and the family were in there at first, and then the family got moved to a safe house. I thought it was the same room the whole time.
Oh, interesting. Okay. For some reason, I thought he and the wife had separate rooms.
It was a suite.
Yeah.
So a living room area and a bedroom thing. He was sleeping on the couch.
Right, but there was only one bed in the bedroom.
Yeah.
So I thought that basically, the wife had one room, and then he had a room with the daughter over in the bed. Because then when he was on the couch, it was the daughter that came out.
I think the daughter and the wife were getting the bed, and he was sleeping on the couch.
Okay.
He got the bed once they had kind of moved out to the safe house.
Yes, there is a reason to occasionally throw your family out.
Yeah. But having the family dynamic, getting to see kind of how he was perceived outside of those in the know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were kind of the filter for, this is what the public is thinking. Mm. It was a fun show. I can't see a second series or season on this, because it ended with a good sense of closure.
Yeah, it did. They could have answered some questions for me. They did a lot with a montage where I could have used either dialogue or a voiceover.
Yeah, at the very least, I probably would have had Kate do a voiceover closing out the case file or something.
I was just thinking, yeah, the case file would have been the way to do that. And don't get me wrong, her absolute final scene, I loved it.
Oh yeah, that's the way to end it, absolutely. Again, classic Russell T. Davies of, this is how she would react in this situation. While they had closure for the war between the land and the sea, I expect at some point down the line in Doctor Who, this will get touched on.
Hmm.
Because I would expect at some point the Doctor to think, you know, I'm really surprised Aquakind hadn't reached out to y'all, and get a comment of, well, they did. It went poorly. Are you guys okay? Well, we're okay.
Yeah. They did have a very First Nations, Native Americans, honestly, probably Aboriginal from Australia thread in with Aquakind.
There's an aspect of humanity is not known as a peaceful race.
But also just the, whether we do it on purpose or on accident, we bring diseases across bodies of water, usually. And then there's the reservations and the let's just confine people who are trying to claim a resource-rich place we want.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I expect at some point we'll touch back on the Aquakind in Doctor Who's later adventures. I just don't see how we could not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how that plays out, when that plays out. And there's no rush for that. I'll be honest, I went into this wondering, would this feel a little hollow of being a Doctor Who story without Doctor Who? It didn't, because it was a unit story.
Yeah.
And we set up the characters. We needed that preamble to really understand Barclay and how the events play out and stuff. So I was very pleased with the story. I guess my disappointment is that at this point, with this having aired and having watched it, I know the BBC is going to do more Doctor Who. I know they're doing it without Disney Plus. I don't know what happened between that relationship between the two companies, because Disney Plus was behind this. I think Disney Plus either didn't have realistic expectations or just didn't have the time to let it grow into what it could and should become.
Mm-hmm.
Because I definitely think Doctor Who in general is a franchise and not just a single show franchise. Again, we've had Doctor Who, we've had Torchwood, we've had the Sarah Jane Adventures, we've had The Class, we've now had this thing with the unit with the Land and the War and the Sea. There is so much more potential in this. And Russell T. Davies, if he is not the best guy on the planet to get this really kind of branched out and stuff into the full franchise, I don't know who is, because he was doing it originally with Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures before franchises were kind of where they're at now.
Yeah.
Where everyone was trying to build one, he did.
Yeah, he was universe building.
Yeah, and he had, for my money, Doctor Who was that core of that universe. You had Torchwood, which was kind of Doctor Who dark.
Mm-hmm.
The things that go bump in the night and stuff. You had the Sarah Jane Adventures, which was kind of Doctor Who light for kids.
Yeah.
So he was really branching out the different types of people you could get, the different interests and whatnot. And again, just a brilliant writer with a good knack of characters, good knack of plot, of kind of the moral to the story, without it being overly soapbox-ish.
Going to morals of the story, I think this one did a beautiful job of pointing out you drop a single plastic bottle on the ground and you don't pick it up because your mindset is, it's just one bottle. My back hurts. I don't want to bend over. Whatever your rationalization is.
Well, it's just one bottle. What more does the guy need?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then you get to that first shot that's fired in this war, and it's hundreds of thousands of bottles being dropped down all over the world because it's every bottle that's ever ended up in the ocean.
Yeah.
And it's that cumulative effect. And that's why it's so dangerous to just fluff off that, it's just one bottle.
Well, it's a where do you draw the line? And Aquakind had gotten to the point where it's this far and no further.
Mm-hmm.
And can't say that I blame them.
Yeah.
I think there are ways the negotiations could have gone differently that could have moved things in a better direction earlier on. But that's not the story.
So. No, no.
And given the negotiations to get the here's the script we're going to follow, never would have happened. But if you'd basically had, here's this random guy, you speak, and suddenly the teleprompter's short out or something, that could have been interesting.
I was intrigued how the little cabal ended up working with the British Prime Minister.
Yeah, some of that was a little weird, because it seemed to be an American military guy and a French military person.
Mm-hmm. And then a business leader.
Yeah, who was a heavy donor for that prime minister of the UK. But there was mention of the White House is on the line, but we never really, I think we saw the president once, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Thereabouts, but there's only so much you can fit into the story, and that wasn't the crux of the story.
I guess my point is, having a cabal that is working against the negotiations, because they see it as financially disastrous, really, if the negotiations succeed the way they want to. That part made sense. It was why the British Prime Minister got caught up in it.
Yes, that I agree with. You're always going to have some people think, sure, we should talk peace, but well, somebody's going to strike first. It may as well be us.
Yeah.
And you can't have peace that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need people thinking that way, because the other side probably is going to have them, too. The trick is, can you rein them in, and can you have them ready to, I almost want to say, do an immediate second strike or whatever, but figure out how the other side would strike first and prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, there was a decisive victory in this story.
Yeah.
And I thought the reaction to the victory was as it should have been. Of
yeah.
Good job, and we're all damned to hell.
Yeah.
So, again, I enjoyed this more than I thought I might, because I was afraid it could just fall a little flat.
I went into it expecting a unit TV show or movie, and really enjoyed it. What I saw online was that people who had heard about this in the context of Doctor Who, and so were very focused on it's part of the Doctor Who universe, or it's got Doctor Who associated with it, so I'm going to watch it, they were the ones who seemed disappointed.
If you're expecting the TARDIS to show up, somebody to pop out and save the day, yeah, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And this show doesn't have that energy, that pacing, that vibe to it. Because some of the hallmarks of a Doctor Who story not only are the TARDIS and the guy popping out, but the big speeches.
Mm-hmm.
The, we've got to save the day now, the music kicks in, and he's on the fly coming up with a plan that'll save everybody, make everything good, and all is right in the world again.
Yeah.
This isn't that.
He gives those speeches, and everybody's just looking like they've been to the most amazing pep rally.
Yeah.
Whereas here, Barclay gives one of his speeches to Salt, and he's connected with her, and then he turns around, and all of the delegates are looking at him like, you said what?
Yeah, yeah. The Doctor is charismatic and a leader that is unlike any we have on Earth, and unfortunately probably ever will. Because again, it's somebody who can say not only what needs to be said, but the right thing for the right reason at the right time and in the right way. Because they're standing up for the little guy, all that sort of a deal. Whereas all of our politicians are standing up for either their self-interest, the self-interest of their constituents. They're not looking at the broader picture and trying to make it a win for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Or defending those who need defending.
Yes.
So if you're looking for Doctor Who, this is in that universe, but this isn't that. There's an energy and hyperkinetic aspect to parts of Doctor Who stories that is not here and should not be here.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a very good unit story. I think we should get more unit stories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they need to be a five-parter or something. I'd be good with just a quarterly, two-hour movie-ish sort of a deal.
Yeah.
Because I think that'd be a lot of fun of just checking in of, okay, here's the quarterly review, or here's what's going on at this other place in unit or something like that.
Well, Kate's got to find a replacement for Christopher.
Yeah.
That could be quite the subplot.
Well, subplot, but also an entry point into a recurring unit series of movies. Who's the new person? How do they come in?
Mm-hmm.
And I would almost go with every time there would be a new person, because somebody's either graduated out of the science thing, or they've lost somebody, or they've just, they can't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is too mind-bending for them, or they found the project that came out through one of their adventures of, this is what I want to study for the rest of my life. This is what I need to deal with, either defend it, or protect it, or hide it, or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're not in the active rotation.
Actually, ending the first one with someone who basically ends up with something that they feel the need to hide forevermore, and then checking in on them periodically could be interesting.
They go out of the unit into the subdivision of Guardians or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is kind of that secret society or whatnot.
Yeah.
I would also play up the secret society of companions.
Yes. We didn't have any companions here, did we?
Nope.
Yeah.
Those were some of the familiar faces we'd seen with unit typically that were not here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, liked it. I was expecting a few more familiar faces than we got, but I thought they rounded out the cast very well overall and did a good job with this.
I'll be honest, I was expecting more war. Less diplomacy, more war.
I was glad we didn't get more war.
I'll agree with that wholeheartedly, but just
given the title, yeah, I expected that too.
I mean, I thought it was going to be more action, more in the trenches, more traditional war.
This was more political drama.
Compared to Chips, this was Law and Order. This was not out on the streets bringing in the bad guys.
No,
this
no,
was
no.
The courtroom side this of the justice.
More similar to The Diplomat than Doctor Who in some respects.
That's a good call. Yeah.
It's what if The Diplomat took place in the Doctor Who universe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, less profanity, of course.
Yeah.
Russell T. Davies doesn't need to lean on profanity to write well. He's much more eloquent and capable of a writer than that.
Twice he suggested places be renamed. And the second time just about broke my heart. Because at first, I thought they were once again saying, no, I think you should call Earth by a different name. And then I was like, oh no, you're talking about where you're sending us. Should be referred to by a different name.
Yeah, that. The first time they referred to renaming the Earth, I thought that line of dialogue needed to be rewritten. Because it was, you should change the name of Earth to Dry.
Mm-hmm.
But the delivery made the word to sound like it could have one O or two O's.
Mm-hmm.
Change the name of Earth to Dry, or change the name of Earth, it's too dry.
Yeah.
So that was one that I heard it differently than it was intended.
I wasn't expecting him to say dry. I was thinking dirt or something like that.
Yeah.
So my brain kind of stuttered on dry. But then as he went into the airlock, I'm like, I can see. But part of it, too, was for me, that was very clearly establishing the we don't want to cohabitate with you.
Yes.
We're not looking for one name that represents the world all of us share.
We've got this part, you've got that part, and never the twain shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, they had some interesting stuff, like what they did with Rust and a few other things.
Yeah.
So, I think there's a lot more they could do along these lines, not necessarily with the specific story, but again, with UNIT. I want to see Russell T. Davies have the resources needed to flesh out the Doctor Who universe as much as he sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason we can't have multiple shows, series of movies, etc. going on with this stuff. He's certainly got the ideas. He's certainly got the writing team, mm-hmm. the directors, the actors.
On the one hand, I agree writers need editors. But on the other hand, I think once you get too many chefs in the kitchen, you've got a problem. And I can't help but wonder if partnering with Disney Plus got a few too many hands on it.
Yeah, what they need is the budget. They don't need the oversight.
Yeah.
At least with Russell T. Davies in charge.
Agreed.
I felt after he got off Doctor Who before, I forget the order, if there were a few other people involved at different mm-hmm. points. And I felt the one who was in charge over the Matt Smith era did pretty well. It was the one after that where things got a little shaky and such.
Well, we seemed to go into an era where the companions were doing what the Doctor should be doing.
And that's the showrunner I was talking about, where things kind of slid. But Russell T. Davies, again, he juggled Doctor Who, reestablishing all of that, established Torchwood, built up UNIT to the modern audience, set up the Sarah Jane Adventures and stuff, really laid the groundwork for that entire era of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back to revisit, I'm like, can he capture lightning in a bottle again?
Mm-hmm.
He's a really talented writer, but I'd hate to see him try and fail. Well, he's tried, and I think he's succeeded.
Yeah.
I think what he did with David Tennant coming back was brilliant. I think the Shudigatwa era was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
This was a lot of fun, too. I just think they don't have the budget behind them they need to be producing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it would be partnering with Netflix or whatever, but they need somebody who can see the potential and the reality of Doctor Who and can trust Russell T. Davies to kind of shepherd it into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say he needs to be writing it all or hands-on on all of it. He needs to oversee it.
Yeah.
He needs to be the Kevin Feige
of
Doctor Who. And I'm good with him being as hands-on as he wants to be. Mm-hmm. I love his writing. But he's also picked a lot of really good people to write other things. And again, he didn't do everything on Sarah Jane and Torchwood while he was doing Doctor Who. He's not crazy.
Yeah.
So I want to see him firmly reestablish the Whoniverse as it's now being known. And if he hasn't already kind of codified this into a Bible of this is how the Doctor stuff works, here's how the UNIT show could work, here's Torchwood, all of those things,
mm-hmm.
he should.
Yeah.
Because again, he understands the property really well.
Yeah. And whoever helped with the casting on this did a really good job.
Yeah, I think the only mistake they made was in the title, because I think it should have been either, not Doctor Who Presents, but something indicating clearly it's in the Doctor Who universe, but is not Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how to do it. I don't think UNIT, The Land Between the War and the Sea, would have cut it either.
Yeah, I think you're right, because we talked before we recorded about the fact that UNIT doesn't scream Whoniverse to everyone.
Yeah.
That's if you're in the know, it makes sense. And I think that's why a lot of the articles I was seeing online were, if not out and out, putting a Doctor Who colon before this.
Yeah.
Were certainly putting, you know, Doctor Who possessive, the war between the land
but
and the sea.
But that sets expectations wrong, I think.
Yep.
And I think if they can figure out how to position these sorts of things, because I hope there are more things like this, where it's in that universe, it is playing with those toys, but it is not the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you're going to have a different style, a different energy, a different angle on the story. But target it to the fans of the universe, set their expectations, and again, hopefully be able to do more stuff like this.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.